Thank you, Mr. Pennington, and good afternoon, everyone. I started to hide outside to make him sweat a little bit, but I figured that would be right. I'd like to welcome everyone that's on the webcast today. I have a topic today that's probably been talked about quite a bit, and I've used some of the stuff in previous messages, but I have a little bit different approach on it today. And as a way of introduction to that, I have a short video clip that I would like to have played. And as you watch this video, it's a story of an Olympic runner and some of the struggles that he went through. But as you watch this video, I would like you to think about the parallels for us and for our spiritual lives. But again, this video is a short video. And again, think about the spiritual parallels for us. And then after the video plays, I will continue the message. Thank you for that video. That video shows a little bit about what happened to Derek Redmond. He was a British runner during the 1992 Barcelona Summer Olympics. And he had trained very hard for that event. And the Olympic 400 meter was to be the culmination of all the effort and all the hard work that he put in. And imagine what he must have felt when he tore his hamstring. His hopes of a medal were torn away, just like his hamstring. And in that moment, it would be really easy to stay down on the track. But he decided differently. He was determined to cross the finish line. And his father was feeling some of the pain as he watched his son struggle. And his father came to help him, to help his son to the finish line. Now, I know we can draw parallels from this video. Our lives may be in a way like Derek's Olympic race. You know, we practice and we train and we put in the hard work, but sometimes the injuries, sometimes the difficulties, they happen to us. And we get knocked down and we get injured and we get hurt. But how do we respond? And I know you probably had already guessed that I was a budding track star in high school. At least in my own mind, I was. But I had a particular event, the 330-meter intermediate hurdles that I was running. And as I was running this event, one track meet, we were making it close to the last turn. And I wasn't in complete last place. I was still ahead of at least one or two, I think. Thought I was doing pretty good. And about to hit the final stretch, and I'm thinking, I can do this. This is not too bad. And then I looked up, and then there were still more hurdles in front of me. So as I approached the remaining hurdles, I took off to get over the hurdle. But I didn't quite get high enough, and I hung my foot or my leg on the hurdle, and down I went, face first on the track. And this was an asphalt track, so it was not a pleasant experience. And needless to say, I didn't do like Derek Redmond did. I didn't get up, and I didn't finish the race. As I laid there on the track, bleeding, crumpled, my hopes destroyed, I finally did manage to get up off the track with some help, but I didn't finish that race. And I don't know that I ran very many more of those races either, because that just wasn't for me after that. But with Derek and with other athletes or other professional people, it may be tough sometimes. You know, it's almost like they were born to do a particular thing, or they were born to accomplish a particular thing in their life. You might say it's their life's purpose. And in that scenario then, it's even more devastating when they reach this pinnacle moment, whether it's the Olympic finals or whatever it is, they reach that pinnacle moment and then they get injured and they fall or they fail. It's pretty devastating. All of that hard work for nothing. Or is it? And the answer to that question depends on how that individual responds to the situation. If they give up and if they quit, then all that hard work probably was for nothing. But however, if they get up and if they keep going and they keep working, then all that hard work is not for nothing. And this idea of our lives being like a runner is not a new one. We've heard messages before on this topic of running and running a race and finishing strong and not quitting and not giving up. But we're going to hear a little bit more today, but from a slightly different perspective. And Paul makes reference to our lives being like that of a race. And if you would, let's turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 9, and we'll start there. 1 Corinthians chapter 9. And we'll start in verse 24. It says, "Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may obtain it, or run in such a way that you may win it." Verse 25, "And everyone who competes for the prize is temperate in all things." Or as a note in my margin says, "They exercise self-control. Now they do it to obtain a perishable crown, but we for an imperishable crown." We may tend to focus, when we read this section of Scripture, more on what verse 25 says about a perishable crown versus an imperishable crown. Our race, our spiritual race that we're running, is in search of that imperishable crown. Our prize for finishing our race is the gift of eternal life. God has promised that to us if we finish our race. But let's look at verse 24 again. It says that all the runners in a race are running or competing, but only one of them will win the prize. And even with that knowledge, when they begin the race, whether it's 20 people, whether it's 200 people, they all know that only one of them is going to cross the line first and win that prize. But they all run, and they all keep competing and running to the very end. Why do they do that? They all have hope that they might be the one out of the 200. I might be the one to win the race. It motivates them. And I, for just a brief second, had that hope in the hurdle race that I was in. But it was quickly dashed. But why do they do that? Why put forth all that effort if you know you're not going to finish the race first? We'll see some possible answers to this question a little bit later in the message. And we notice in the last part of verse 24, it says to run in such a way that you may obtain it, or that you may win it. And we might take from that phrase that there are some things that a runner can do in order to better their chances of winning the race. And this is where all of that hard work, that effort, all of that stuff comes in. So that runner may run in such a way that they can win the race. So we see here in these two verses that all the runners in this race are competing. And they're all running. They exercise self-control in their training before the race and in how they run during the race. They know that only one of them is going to win this race and win a prize that is perishable. And again, our spiritual race will yield a prize that's far better than any of these physical prizes that we may win. So how do we run so that we may win our race? If we're to follow what it says here, to run in a way that we may obtain it, how do we do that? And if we read a little further down, we get some clues to that. In verse 26, it says, "Therefore I run thus, not with uncertainty, thus I fight, not as one who beats the air. But I discipline my body, I bring it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should become disqualified." Paul is talking about the dedication of all these people that are running for this perishable crown. And then down there in verse 26, where he says, "Therefore," as we know when we read that in the Bible, this means pay attention at this point. You need to listen up, pay attention, or because of what we have just talked about, this is what we need to do. You know, we just read that these individuals are in search of a perishable crown, But we are after an imperishable crown, a prize that will last forever. So Paul is saying, because of this, because of the prize that we're after, this is how you should run. And the title I have today is Run in Such a Way That You May Obtain It. And in the time remaining, I want to offer us three steps or three points that we may use to help us ensure that we can win the race that we're running. And Paul lists those for us in verse 27. 1 Corinthians 9, verse 27, the first point where he says, "But I discipline my body." So discipline is the first point that we can apply. And if you look at the definition of discipline, and there are several different definitions of this, but to bring to a state of order and obedience by training and control, to punish or penalize for the sake of enforcing obedience and perfecting moral character. Or another definition is to train or develop by instruction and exercise, especially in self-control. And if we look at a definition of self-control, it's restraint exercised over one's own impulses, emotions, or desires. The ability to control oneself, in particular one's emotions and desires, or the expression of them in one's behavior, especially in a difficult situation. And I have coached some youth sports teams, and in process of coaching my son's basketball team, and one of the things that we talk about there with the boys is that you have to have control of your mind, especially in a tense game situation. You know, if you lose your temper, if you fly off the handle, you know, it's detrimental not only to you, but it can be detrimental to the entire team. So this idea of self-control, especially in difficult situations, is one that's very important to us, but it's one that can be very difficult for us to do as well. Let's turn to 2 Peter chapter 1. You might want to hold your place here in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, because we will get our remaining 2 points here. 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 5. "But also for this very reason, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue, to virtue knowledge, to knowledge self-control, to self-control perseverance, to perseverance godliness, to godliness brotherly kindness, and to brotherly kindness love." What we see here in the heading in my Bible above these verses is fruitful growth in the faith. So what we're reading about here is describing is a growth process. And it says to faith add virtue, or add to your faith behavior that shows high moral standards or righteousness. And then with faith, belief in what God tells us, we exhibit righteousness. And this leads to us furthering our knowledge and understanding. And as that increases, it becomes more important that we exercise self-control. And as the previous things increase, as each step in this growth process increases, you know, it can become easier for us to exercise self-control, you know, as we continue to grow. And we increasingly will recognize why it is important then to have self-control. The second thing, the second point we can look at back in 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 27, and bring it into subjection. And this phrase, bring into subjection, can mean to be a slave driver, to enslave, or to subdue. You know, to bring something to subdue something or to enslave something. Let's turn to Romans chapter 6. And again, hold your place here. We'll turn to Romans chapter 6. And we'll start in verse 18. Romans 6, 18. It says, "And having been set free from sin, you became slaves of righteousness. I speak in human terms because of the weakness of your flesh. For just as you presented your members as slaves of uncleanness and of lawlessness, leading to more lawlessness, so now present your members as slaves of righteousness for holiness. For when you were slaves of sin, you were free in regard to righteousness. What fruit did you have then in the things of which you are now ashamed? For the end of those things is death. But now, having been set free from sin and having become slaves of God, you have your fruit to holiness and the end everlasting life. Living a life of sin bears ugly fruit. That fruit has no future. That fruit, or the result of that lifestyle, ends in death. But God has given us a way out, and His Son paid the price for our sin. His Son paid the price for all that rotten fruit that we were bearing. In the new life that God offers us, we are to be slaves to that way of life. And a better way to look at that, a better term, depending on which translation you use, might be to say we want to be servants of righteousness. Slaves and servants, depending on where you are and how you look at it, can have totally different meanings and implications. So a better way to look at that verse would be that we're to be servants of righteousness. In our Christian lives, we must be totally enslaved to, or we must totally serve God's way of life. Everything that we do must be totally committed to His way. And you will find in some instances where servants are serving their master, they have a good relationship, quite different from many, many years ago when slaves would be serving their master. You know, a servant is wanting to serve and please their master because they buy into what the master is offering them. So for us, bringing into subjection would be us being servants of righteousness. And again, totally committed to and totally in to God's way of life. The third and final point here, back in 1 Corinthians 9, verse 27. I'll read the entirety of verse 27. "But I discipline my body, and I bring it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should become disqualified." The third point here is our example. Or you might also refer to it as we have to live it. You know, Paul is saying that when I have preached this to others, if I'm not following it, if I'm not doing it, then I myself become disqualified. Professional and Olympic athletes have a very large platform that they can use in order to help and influence other people, and especially young people. They look to these athletes, they look to these Olympians. "I want to be like that man or that woman when I grow up." So they have a lot of influence over these people that are watching what they do. And they can do good things, or they can do bad things with that platform. And many of them do use that platform to do good things and to be a positive example. And we all have a very similar opportunity. Not on the scale that these professional athletes or Olympians do, but we have a similar opportunity nonetheless. And how do we use that opportunity? How we use it is up to each of us. We've heard the phrase, walk the walk or talk the talk. We must live by that phrase, especially when it comes to our Christian lives. Turn back to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5. We'll start in verse 14. It says, "You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works, and they may glorify your Father in heaven." We have an opportunity as a Christian, you know, as an individual that's following God's way of life, we have an example, an opportunity to set an example to those around us, whether it be our friends, our family members, our co-workers, whoever we come in contact with, we have an opportunity to be an example to them of the life that we're living, of what God's way of life looks like. Turn over to John chapter 15. Another verse on this point. John chapter 15 and verse 8. It says, "By this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit, so you will be my disciples." You know, if we're bearing good fruit, you know, we're glorifying God when we do that. You know, people look at us and see that we are living what we believe, we're walking that walk, we're talking that talk. They see that in everything that we do. The result of that is we're bearing good fruit, and that glorifies God in His way. You know, it's an opportunity to be a positive and example to them. Let's turn over to 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2. We'll start in verse 11. It says, "Beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lust which war against the soul, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works which they observe, glorify God in the day of visitation." So even when we are in the world, among the people of the world, you know, it's important that we also live the way we proclaim to believe in, and we continue to set a good example. I have worked construction for a long time, and there's a few individuals in the construction trade that are not very godly individuals. And you can run across some pretty crass individuals, and it can be easy sometimes to get caught up in that. If the guys are talking about something, or, you know, the conversation's going somewhere it shouldn't, it can be real easy to get caught up in that. You know, or can remove yourself from it and not participate in that. So it can be a struggle sometimes, but we have to make sure that we continue to walk the walk that we're talking about. Talk the talk and walk the walk. Let's look at Titus chapter 1. Titus chapter 1. Titus chapter 1 and verse 16. It says, "They profess to know God, but in works they deny Him, being abominable, disobedient, and disqualified for every good work." People that say one thing, or they pretend to believe something, but they live something differently, or they act contrary to what they say. And there's a warning here that these individuals will be disqualified. They will miss out on the prize that God is promising to those that remain faithful and obedient to Him. You know, as Paul had mentioned back in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, by not living what he was preaching, he could risk being disqualified as well. Let's turn to Philippians chapter 3. Philippians chapter 3. In verse 17. Philippians 3, verse 17. It says, "Brethren, join in following my example, and note those who so walk, as you have us for a pattern. For many walk, of whom I have told you often, and now tell you even weeping, that they are the enemies of the cross of Christ, whose end is destruction, whose God is their belly, and whose glory is in their shame, who set their mind on earthly things." Just as we have examples to follow of those who have gone before us, we are also examples to those around us and to those coming after us. And if we finish the race faithfully, then we have an opportunity to win that imperishable crown and be transformed into a glorious spirit being. And you don't have to turn there, but 2 Timothy 4:7, Paul realized that his life was coming to an end, and he had made the statement that he is finishing his race faithfully. You know, we know that Paul went through a lot of very difficult things, a lot of difficult situations, but he finished his race, and he finished it faithfully. Let's turn to Hebrews chapter 12. And this will be our final scripture. Hebrews chapter 12. And then I've only got another 15-minute video to close with. Just kidding. Final verse here in Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1. "Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us." And just as Paul did and many other people that have come before us, let us run our race with endurance, this race that's been set before us. So why put forth so much effort? The reward for doing so is far more than any prize we win in a physical race. We're looking at all eternity as a member of the God family. That's our goal. Why do we keep running? Because quitting is not an option. If we quit, we give up everything. We choose not to live when we quit. Our spiritual race is a growth process, and it can be a painful growth process. And we are going to fall down, and we are going to get injured, just as Derek Redmond's dad saw the pain that his son was experiencing when he tore his hamstring. And he was moved to get up and help his son make it to the finish line. God looks at you and I the same way. He sees the pain that we go through, and he is there to help us make it to the finish line. And if we think on that, if we remember that, that should be extremely encouraging to each and every one of us. We are going to fall down. We are going to get bruised and banged up. But we know that God's going to help us to the finish line. So we must exercise self-control. We must bring our lives into subjection, complete and total subjection and service to God's way of life, to His righteousness. And we must live it. And we must be a good example. And if we do that, just like Paul, we must faithfully finish our race because there is laid up for us a crown of righteousness.